Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and thank you for joining us here on Odyssey Sports. That's right, it's Big Time Baseball with me, Cody Decker, former professional baseball player turned professional smartass on the radio, and with me, the one, the only, you see him everywhere. You see his writing, you see his reporting, you see him on MLB Network. He is the incredible John Heyman. John, how you doing, buddy?
Cody, it's always a pleasure. It's mostly tweeting more than writing now at the moment, but yes.
Well, that seems like that is the new form of actual communication and new form yes. of journalism at this point. And
yes, I work hard at Twitter for no money. It's like my old job delivering papers.
Hey, it gets
working
the job
my butt
done.
Off and you get no money out of it.
But it gets the job done, John, yes, because here's the fact. Every day, the most tweets I see, the most important tweets that are most impactful to me and my life on a daily basis, believe it or not, follow at John Heyman, because that's where I'm getting the most important information that pertains to my life now. And it's the off season. The hot stove is burning. We have so much to cover today. We got some reactions to the AL MVP, the NL MVP, of course, some other awards we're going to talk about. The hot stove, again, going crazy, and the shortstop market through the roof, not to mention the outfield market. There is just so much going on, and we can't sit here and pretend that there isn't a possible work stoppage looming coming December 1st. There is just so much taking place, and it's incredible because we're only a couple of weeks into the offseason. So, John, let's get right into it.
First of all, I want to say you're a very positive guy, Cody. I really appreciate that you said a possible work stoppage.
I'm trying.
You've already made my day, because I'm going to pretend that you have some inside information that we could avoid this work stoppage, and I'm going to feel good for the day. Don't tell me otherwise. I'm just going to assume there's some inside information, and you feel there's a chance we're going to avoid this lockout. So
there is definitely no chance we're avoiding the lockout.
What did I just say?
I'm sorry. I mean, it's going to happen. We're going to avoid it entirely. We're gold.
Oh, okay.
We're gold. Right. In fact, season's starting in 2 weeks.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, man. What I would give. But let's just get right out to the gate, John. Let's talk about the reactions to some of these awards that have come out. First things first, we're just going to start with the no-duh segment of the show. And let's just talk about AL and NL MVP, Shohei Ohtani, Bryce Harper. John, was there even a question in your mind?
There was no question for Ohtani. I mean, he was clearly the MVP, got all 30 votes, which I was surprised because, you know, what I kept saying, I probably started in June saying that he was the MVP, and I got a lot of pushback, but that's from fans. It's not from journalists. And, you know, by the end, I think it was clear. you know, there were people who were holding out if Vlad Guerrero had won the Triple Crown and the Toronto had gotten into the playoffs. Now, they only missed by one game, but if they'd gotten into the playoffs and maybe won the Triple Crown, maybe he would have gotten some votes. But to me, Ohtani had an all-time great season, maybe the greatest season of all time. I mean, we've never seen anybody do this, at least not in our lifetime, but can only imagine what Babe Ruth did as well, and that's kind of what we saw with Ohtani. Bryce Harper, I did vote for Bryce Harper. I had that vote, and you know, I was with Tatis up until maybe early September, and I finally switched, and you know, I looked at it every few days. I mean, you really get neurotic about these things. You don't want to embarrass yourself, and you certainly want to, you know, put your best foot forward and make the right pick. So I had Harper first, which I thought he would win, and the one semi-controversial thing where I got a little pushback, I had Crawford second because, you know, I'm old-fashioned. I still count winning. And he ended up finishing fourth. But, I mean, people were screaming. I mean, I'm only imagining they're screaming because it's Twitter. But that I had him second and he should be fourth behind Tatis and Soto. But I had him ahead because he's a great defender. His team won 107 games. He was consistent all the way through. And, you know, I just thought Harper really carried his team in that second half with an 1,188 OPS in the second half, almost getting them into the playoffs. They had no right to be in the playoffs. They're a real top-heavy team. So I agreed with the picks, and I made one of the picks, so it was easy for me.
I agree with the picks as well. You know, I was like you. I was on Tatis Jr. the entire season. It wasn't quite middle of September. It was about the end of August, early September, that I started to really start to change my mind a little bit, seeing what Harper was doing, like you said, carrying that ball club towards the end of the season, almost making them a playoff contender. And they, again, were not a playoff contender last season. And then, of course, Juan Soto, another incredible season for him. But when I just looked at the numbers at the end of the day, I felt like I had to eat crow at the end of the season and tell everybody, guys, I've been wrong this whole time. It's going to be Bryce Harper. What a monster year. And you know what? Something that I think we all kind of overlook, because Bryce Harper has been a true success story. Two MVPs, but this was a guy that I was 16 years old on the cover of Sports Illustrated touting him to be the future. How often do you see somebody that young touted to be the future and it turns out to be right? The absolute incredible amount of pressure that must have been on this guy going into his professional career had to be off the charts.
I mean, amazing. And yeah, you're right. He has lived up to it. Absolutely. Came up as a teenager. I remember writing a column saying, this is too soon. What did I know? I was wrong. He was pretty darn good even that first year. And he's had two very special seasons. First MVP was obvious and fantastic. And this one, you know, he had a 1,050 OPS, which was better than Soto and Tatis. And Soto and Tatis were on teams that imploded. Soto's team imploded early and Tatis's team imploded late and was a real disappointment. You know, I know some people are going to say it's just about the best player, but you know what? Harper was the best player. So you can't really argue with that, and you're right about Sports Illustrated. I mean, I'm old enough to you won't remember this, neither will Dylan, our producer. When Bruce Hardy, I believe his name was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a schoolboy athlete. This is going back probably 40 years ago, and you guys probably don't remember Bruce Hardy, I'm sure, but he ended up having a nice career in the NFL. You know, he's a nice player, but you know, people remember, at least us people over 50, remember that he was a Sports Illustrated cover boy as a schoolboy athlete. The other one I remember early, and he ended up becoming more successful as a manager, was Clint Hurdle.
Yes, and, yes, absolutely.
He was a baseball player in Florida, and he was going to be the superstar, and it did not pan out. He did become a major leaguer, which you did as well, Cody, so congratulations to you for that.
Oh,
and he got even a little more than a cup of coffee. He had probably a Danish with his coffee. You know, he had a career as he got to the majors. I mean, to me, I'm impressed. But his real career was as a manager and as a hitting coach. So, but yeah, they were no Bryce Harper in terms of their performance as athletes.
Yeah, and then kind of piggybacking off of these AL and NL MVPs that we consider no duh, let's look at the Comeback Player of the Year awards. Buster Posey, I think there's not going to be a whole lot of argument about what he did on the NL side. You know, he skipped out on the 2020 60 game season, comes back this year and absolutely helps that team get over the limit to get to the playoffs, winning their division. You know, that's a team, by the way, the San Francisco Giants, the previous season in 60 game season, missed the playoffs by one game. And I keep thinking, what if they had Buster Posey in that 2020 season? Would we be talking about a different World Series champion other than the Dodgers? And it's one of those things that we'll never know, but you can't ever look at what he's done for that team. Adding Buster Posey to that team is just night and day. And part of me is kind of sad to see, well, you know, I am sad to see him hang up the spikes, but comeback player of the year, Buster Posey, National League. To me, it was kind of an obvious choice. What do you think, John Heyman?
Yeah, I do. I agree with it. Both obvious choices. And you're right. I mean, if the Giants had gotten in, you never know. If you get in, you might win. Look at the Braves this year. And, you know, obviously they were a very good team in the second half, and we probably all underrated them to a degree. Tony and I both picked them to win the division, but when they lost Acuna, we gave up on them. So you never know. And the Giants are a team that won three World Series when they weren't the best team. And this year, when they were the best team, they exited in the first round. So you never know what they might have done. And I think Posey was the right choice. I'm a little surprised he retired, but more power to him. I think he's a Hall of Famer. That's probably a debate or a story for another day, but I think he's a Hall of Famer. And you know what? If he comes back in 2023, he could be Comeback Player of the Year again. I think there has been somebody who's won Comeback Player of the Year a couple times, right? I can't think of who it is, but is it him? It might be him because he had that terrible injury, right?
Yeah, that injury when he broke his ankle.
And maybe it was him that, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but he might have, this might be his second already. Maybe he can make it three comeback players of the year. I don't know. Maybe Dylan can look that up. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, terrific player, really a great leader, and had a fantastic swan song, was terrific this year. You know, I realize we're on live right now, and your comment about how he skipped out on the season, I know that was quick. He opted out during a pandemic, so I know you didn't mean it.
I apologize.
I know you didn't mean that.
Yeah, if it makes it sound like I was
no. I know how much respect you have for him. Skipped could mean something different to different people. My generation, it sounds like he didn't take it seriously. But knowing him, he did, and he's got, I think, couple sets of twins. So he's got a lot going on, and I can't blame him. More power to him, and to me, he's a Hall of Famer.
And John, you are right. Posey won it back in 2012, Comeback Player of the Year award winner.
Not many people do that.
No, and I can't stress this enough. You're right, John. Skipped out is definitely the wrong phrase. What I meant was obviously opted out due to the pandemic. Right. You know, you can't blame any player for that, making that decision. What's best for them and best for their families. And I 100% respected it. And, you know, well, look, we got out of it. We got a Comeback Player of the Year award out of it. An amazing final season. Three World Series for that guy. And I'm with you. I do believe he is a Hall of Famer. Just to piggyback on that as well, though, the real great story of the year, in my opinion, is this. And that is Comeback Player of the Year in the American League.
Yeah,
Trey Mancini.
Right.
No question about it. It's just the best story, in my opinion, in all of sports. Seeing him in the Home Run Derby, seeing the success that he had this season in Baltimore in a year where Baltimore did not have a lot to write home about. I couldn't be a bigger Trey Mancini fan if I tried, and I am just thrilled that he's been getting this recognition, and I hope it just continues for him.
Absolutely. What a great guy, and he's actually we usually have executives as guests or managers. He was one of two active players that we've had as a guest, and he was terrific. We had Mike Yastrzemski as well, and Trey Mancini, what a great individual, and fantastic. So glad that he recovered and had a very nice year after missing 2020. Just a terrific individual. And you're right. It's nice that Baltimore had a couple nice stories this year with Mullins also. Mountcastle had a nice year as a rookie. Wasn't really in contention for the rookie of the year, but I know people in Baltimore were distressed about that, but there were better rookies this year. But Mancini, fantastic. Had stage 3 colon cancer to come back from that and perform as he did, just terrific.
Yeah, what an incredible story. And just to round up this no duh section of the show, a 2-year extension has been put in place for Alex Cora. I think the Red Sox have been nuts not to do it. I think we all expected it. I mean, you can't deny that what Alex Cora is to the Red Sox organization.
Yeah, I mean, he's a managing savant in my mind. Just a terrific strategist. He just, yeah, I mean, you never know who's going to be a great manager, who's going to be able to take to it. I mean, he's a great leader, so much respect in that clubhouse. And, you know, normally options are not picked up early. There really isn't an advantage to picking up an option early. I guess if it's a manager, you don't want a lame duck manager, so they could have picked up one option. But they picked up both options, and my understanding, $3 million a year. So they obviously have tremendous faith in him, and why not? He deserves it. One of the best managers in the game, no question about that.
And one big suggestion for any listener listening right now, look up Alex Cora's career, because he was a hell of an infielder. And I know Joey Cora was probably the more popular of the Cora brothers, but I will say Alex Cora, he played for the Los Angeles Dodgers at one point. Alex Cora is responsible for the single greatest at bat I have ever watched in my life.
A lot of fouls,
about a 21 pitch at bat that ended with a home run over the right field wall. It is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And Alex Cora, obviously, arguably the best manager in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And you know what? Joey Cora, who's currently unemployed, he was let go as the Pirates. I believe he was the third base coach with the Pirates. And he is a terrific baseball mind, too. I worked with him briefly at MLB Network. And what a smart guy, Vanderbilt guy. And Omar Minaya tells me that Joey Cora is actually a better strategist than Alex Cora. You know, I hope he gets an opportunity at some point to manage. And in terms of playing careers, I think Joey did have the better playing career. I know that at bat made a big impression on you. But Joey Cora was a pretty good player. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say
former
star.
All-star.
Yeah, he was an all-star. Okay.
1997.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, he was a pretty good player. And I remember Alex Rodriguez, whatever you think of him, saying that Joey Cora was a leader on those Mariners teams and really helped him a lot early in his career. So he's terrific, and I hope he gets a chance somewhere. I don't know. You know, you'd think his brother would be – that would make sense, but maybe they don't like that nepotism thing. Some teams like nepotism. Other teams don't.
Yeah, I've seen it work, and I've seen it not work
at
the exact same
time. You don't
want
it to not work. Yeah, you don't want it to not work, I'll say.
Yeah, that adds a very, very interesting situation when it comes to Thanksgiving when you fire your brother at some point. And on top of that, I will tell you also, Joey Cora's playing career, I was such a big, you know, it was the 90s. I grew up in the 90s, and I was a huge Seattle Mariners fan, like any kid that grew up in the 90s. And Joey Cora was that leadoff man for that Seattle Mariners team.
Right.
He also had the coolest batting stance in Major League Baseball. I used to mimic it all the time, because that's what we did back then.
He was a terrific player, a little fellow, smaller than Alex even, and really was a terrific two-way player with the White Sox, I believe, as well. Wasn't he with the White Sox? I'm not sure. He coached with the White Sox, I know, under Ozzie Guillen, and really probably did all the work at that point. So that's off the record. That's off the record.
Well, we'll edit it out. Well, let's get on to the other things that are taking place. And this is actually a segment of the show I'm going to call Peel Back the Curtain, because we get a rundown every week from our great producer, Dylan, who does an incredible job with us. And Dylan is a Mets fan. And I want to point out, when I say peel back the curtain, it says right here, it's really cool to see the Clippers, I mean Angels, making significant moves to address their needs. That is the most Mets fan statement possible. He is so unhappy. Noah Syndergaard is now a Los Angeles Angel of Anaheim, along with Aaron Loop. Wow, I really loved the Aaron Loop pickup. Obviously, I like the Syndergaard pickup as well for the Angels, especially if he can come back healthy. But Aaron Loop has been arguably the best reliever in Major League Baseball for the past two seasons.
Oh, I mean, he was almost unhittable this past year. I think left-handed batters got like one or two RBIs against him, or one or two extra base hits. Hit like 95 against them this year. He had a 95 ERA, 0.95 ERA this year.
Incredible.
So, and the Angels really had struggled in that area. So that will be a big help for them. That's huge. And it's a lot of money, two years, $17 million. The Mets weren't anywhere near that. They were not going to go anywhere close to that. So he did have a lot of interest, but that was the most interest. And, you know, the Angels, I think their strategy is to go short-term, high dollar per year. And obviously they did that with Syndergaard. I was one of those who was surprised that he was able to turn down the qualifying offer and get more money. I was wrong there. Give it up to Noah for doing that. He threw two innings over the last 2 years, and he got $21 million out of it. He got $10.5 million an inning, which I think is more than even Verlander got. I don't know. Verlander got $50 million after throwing six innings over the last 2 years. So that's only 8.3, I believe, something like that, million per inning. It's a great time to be a talented pitcher, and Noah Syndergaard certainly is that. I mean, the upside is there. The moxie is there. I get it. It could work out big, but, you know, it's a gamble for somebody who only threw two innings with no breaking balls last year. But I'm rooting for Noah. I don't know if you noticed, you follow my Twitter, but Noah and I have become fast friends on Twitter. He does great tweets. I think he's the best tweeter among active ball players. Very entertaining fellow. And when I said that I was surprised he got the qualifying offer and expected him to take it, he had a funny tweet with that, and then obviously disagreed with me, and he was right. I was wrong. And it went from there with the comments with Mike Francesa. We won't get into the whole thing, but the last tweet from Syndergaard was that I'm his new bestie, basically. So I really appreciated that. And he's got like 1.2 million followers. And I'll tell you how good a tweeter is. I mean, he basically hasn't pitched in 2 years, but he's got a lot to say. He's very entertaining.
Well, and he's also got that wonderful book club, and everybody's got to join Noah Syndergaard's book club, first things first. But I'm going to agree with you, John, on one thing that you said especially. I actually really like this move from the Angels. I like these short-term deals, a little bit of high value. I know they're spending a lot for the years, the AAVs, but this is a team that did draft 20 pitchers last year in 20 rounds, 20 full-on pitchers. I think this is a team that's looking to spend some money short-term on arms and hopefully develop these arms to the point where, you know, they can be a self-sustainable organization, because they just haven't been for the past 15 years.
Yeah, I'm glad that Perry Minasian, the relatively new GM, has been able to convince the owner, Artie Moreno, we got to do something about the pitching. I mean, this has been going on a decade there with the pitching problems that they've had. And Artie is probably the most involved owner. So he's in the middle of everything, and certainly was in the middle of the Pujols and all these signings they had, other than Wilson, the pitcher from Texas that they got. He signed for $75 million, I think. But all these big signings, they've all been hitters, mostly outfielders, Upton and Hamilton and Gary Matthews Jr., for $50 million. I mean, mm-hmm. Pujols, some people will tell you that Pujols was really good for the first 4 years or so. And, you know, he was certainly good for getting the TV contract, and maybe it's worthwhile just for that. But, I mean, the 10-year deal, I mean, we're not going to see a 32-year-old first baseman get a 10-year deal anymore. But Artie Moreno just went for the big names, went for the hitters. And they never have put together a decent pitching staff. And it's a shame. I mean, Mike Trout's the best player in the game. I mean, I guess you could argue Ohtani is now. But Mike Trout has been the best player in the game. And he's got like 9 at-bats in the postseason. I covered that series against the Royals. He got one hit. And it's a shame. So I'm glad that Perry Minasian is focused on pitching, and they're letting him focus on pitching. And maybe there are more moves to come for the Angels.
Yeah, I hope so, because right now it seems like, especially in the AL West, this is the time to strike. It seems like Seattle is ready to go. It seems like the A's are ready to punt for the next couple of years. It seems as though that the Astros are definitely going to still be at the top of that. And the Texas Rangers, we don't know what they're going to do yet. But looking forward into this offseason, I mean, so far we've seen that the Angels have been a little aggressive. I mean, if you can call 2 moves so far aggressive, but so far they're the team that's been the loudest. Who do you think is going to be more aggressive or as aggressive as the Angels? Because you know AJ Preller is in the wings somewhere looking to do some things. The Giants have already made 2 moves yesterday, signing 2 more pitchers. We're hearing news about Mats possibly going to the Mets. Mets are actually around a lot of names. Who do you think is going to be a little bit more aggressive? In fact, you and I discussed, I believe, yesterday a little bit about the Yankees and whether or not they're going to be aggressive. This is going to be a very interesting offseason. What are you thinking? What are you hearing? What do you think is going to be the team that's going to really make some moves?
Well, the teams that are going to spend, I think, pretty clearly Detroit, who already did with Rodriguez. They're in the middle of a shortstop market. They probably will get one of the shortstops. Texas, they have a lot of money to spend. Evan Grant documented that, and they are going to spend big money. Obviously, we've seen the Giants. The Blue Jays, I mean, they're still hoping to get Ray and or Semien, so that's big money, obviously, and That's a big market team. I do think the Mets, they want to win. I mean, Steve Cohen is now there, and he's made it clear that Billy Epler has the funds to go get some reinforcements, and they need plenty. So, you know, they're going to spend and the Dodgers. I mean, if you're a Dodger, what a great time to be a Dodger fan. I mean, you're a Santa Monica guy. So, you know, out there, when I was in San Diego, I asked Andrew Friedman about the spending going forward with a $270 million payroll. He basically said it was fluid. That was the word that he used. Anyway, in his case, what that means is he goes to the owner, Mark Walter, and if Mark Walter generally approves what Andrew Friedman suggests, which, you know, I can't really blame him. Andrew Friedman has done a terrific job. They won 106 games following up on the World Series championship. So they're going to be aggressive, obviously. I mean, you've got Seager and you've got Scherzer and you've got Jansen and Kershaw as free agents. So we know they're going to be aggressive. We think Seattle's going to be aggressive. We're not sure. I'm not as confident as them in them, as their fans will tell you, as others are. boy, they're all over me. They had a negative 50 run differential. It's nice to win 90 games, but how'd you do it? They yeah. did it. You know, the players showed a lot of heart. I mean, they really did. The manager service did a good job. They're not, to my mind, they were a 90-win team, but they're not that kind of a talented team, in my opinion. The Phillies are going to spend outfield, obviously bullpen they need as well. So, I mean, we got a lot of teams that are going to be aggressive, and I think we're seeing that early on with the pitchers. The pitchers are the ones that are most coveted at this point.
Yeah, and we are noticing that the pitchers are extremely coveted, despite the fact that we have a market right now flooded with arguably, and correct me if I'm wrong, do you remember a shortstop market being this big in one season?
No. I don't remember any position being this impressive in terms of the market. And, you know, Lindor got signed up. Lindor could have been in this as well. But, you know, I mean, as it turns out, they overpaid for him. And the result of it is now that Correa and Seager, the top two guys on the shortstop market, both want to get paid above that. And you know what? They are better players, in my opinion, than Lindor. I don't know. You may have a different opinion of that, but I think as we sit here today, Correa and Seager, I would rank them higher than Lindor.
As would I.
Yeah, okay. Well, then maybe I'm right. In any case, they're looking in that category. Will they get it? I'm not so sure. We'll see. I mean, right at this point, it looks like Seager is very popular. And the Dodgers want to bring him back. Correa, we know, was offered that low ball $160 million, thanks to Mark Berman's report. That's not going to get it done. That's his own team doing that. And L.A. is only focused on – it's Seager or bust for the Dodgers. You know, if they get Seager, they'll use Seager at short, and Turner will play second. If they don't get Seager, Turner will be at short, and Lux will be at second. You know, some other teams think that if they bring Seager back, they might trade Turner. I think that's unlikely because, you know, there's not going to be much time if we have a lockout, whatever. You know, and they like him. I mean, there's no question that he performed very well. He was, fifth or sixth in MVP voting. And, you know, he's a terrific player. But if you bring Seager back, one of the advantages to having Turner was that he was the insurance in case you lose Seager. So they won't have that issue anymore. And Seager will presumably sign to a 9-year deal or whatever at that point. And, you know, other teams are going to be looking to make a move on that. Now, Baez, he was hit and miss, certainly, with the Cubs, but he played very well for the Mets. I mean, the 290 on base went up to 370 with the Mets, and he's got a pretty nice market. I mean, there are teams looking at him, including Boston and Detroit and many others. I still like him going back to the Cubs, and nobody else agrees with me on that. Nobody thinks I'm right, but we'll see. We'll see. He didn't have his usual year. A terrific two-way player. Great defender, great hitter, great talent, but he did not have his usual year. You know, to me, he looks like a backup in a plan in some of these places. Obviously, Houston's going to need a shortstop. You know, perhaps them. You know, we know the Yankees are looking at these shortstops. They want to go short-term, though, I think, generally. That's why I think they look like Semien the best, although my understanding is Semien is looking for 7 or 8 years. That's not that short term, but he is, I believe, 30 years. He's over 30 anyway. He's about 30 years old, so he's a little older than the others. Correa and Seager particularly are quite young, being 27 years old. There's a lot going on here. The Yankees are involved. The Dodgers are involved. The Texas certainly involved. And, you know, Story is from Arlington, Texas, so we've connected them to him to them. And Correa, we've connected to Detroit with the A.J. Hinch thing, and they just had breakfast. I don't know if we're reading too much into that, but my understanding with Detroit, as I've written, tweeted, whatever you want to call it, they do not want to spend the $300 million for one person. So maybe Correa signs there and doesn't get $300 million. Maybe they change their mind. He goes over $300 million. But that seems to be about the right price for Correa based on everything. The defense, I think he had the top WAR for position players in the American League this year. Pretty darn good player, although at this point there seems to be more activity with Seager.
You know, I have noticed, and this is something I will say, and I've said this many times when I played, there's only a couple of guys I ever shared a field with or played with or against that I just thought, this guy is on a different level than everyone else on this field. And it's not necessarily only talent. It's everything. There's something about this guy that is just might not even be quantifiable, but also has all the quantifiable things as well. And that is Carlos Correa. When I'm playing against Carlos Correa, it was like I wasn't playing the same sport as this guy. And the only other time I really felt that was playing against Mike Trout towards the end of his minor league career, to which when he goes up to the big leagues, it's like, okay, he's never coming back.
No.
He's just, it's incredible how good Carlos Correa is. As selfishly, I kind of think I love the idea of him going to Detroit. Corey Seager, I think the market is there for him, but you know, the Dodgers want to bring him back. And you brought up the fact the Dodgers' options right now are ridiculous. The fact that they can let Corey Seager walk and they're going to be perfectly fine. That's just how good the Dodgers currently are. Trevor Story is an incredibly, pardon the expression, he's an incredibly interesting story. You know, the whole thing with the Colorado Rockies and him getting away from them right now. And I don't think the market's going to be there. And I spoke with Joel Sherman yesterday, and he had this idea that he might end up taking a 1-year short-term deal with the Yankees and maybe re-hit the market next year with a not flooded shortstop market. And to me, that sounds like a great idea, but you bring up the fact that he is from Arlington. So the Rangers would be a phenomenal fit. There is just so many question marks. And oh, and by the way, I didn't even mention Javi Baez or Marcus Semien. Marcus Semien, who is arguably right up there in the MVP voting this season. It's going to be an exciting offseason with a weird gap, because I think the market's just going to be go, 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 pause, go, 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 season. It's going to be a unique, unique offseason.
Well, we're going to have a lull there because we do expect this lockout to occur on December 1 or 2. So we're having a lot of activity now, which is cool, and much more than we usually do around Thanksgiving time. And we're going to see some decent signings. I saw someone reported that Semien and Seager could go before the lockout. That seems unlikely still to me, but even to bring that up as a possibility shows you how different this offseason is. Some guys want to get done, you know, and don't want to have to think about it all through the lockout. And you can't really blame them. Correa is not going to get done in this period, I'm sure. It doesn't seem like the market is forming quickly. That doesn't mean it won't be a great market. I'm with you. I think he's a fantastic player. I said on Twitter about a month ago, I thought he was the best defender in baseball at any position. And he did win the Platinum Glove, even though of course you get a lot of pushback on Twitter, like I'm an idiot. He won the Platinum Glove, guys. You know, I mean, he's certainly in the conversation. And I appreciate the fact you were on the field with him and saw that. I did see A-Rod say he was the LeBron of baseball. I think that's probably a friend talking. There is no LeBron of baseball. Baseball isn't that kind of game where one player can dominate a game or win a championship. Otherwise,
you mentioned Mike Trout has only played 8 playoff games.
Right, right.
It's incredible. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Correa. Yeah, I don't see him as the LeBron of the game. And like you said, baseball is just not built that way.
No, it's the sport. It's not him. He's a great, great player. But there is no player like Mickey Mantle, who I saw play. You guys didn't see him. He wasn't the LeBron. It's not that kind of a sport. I mean, it might be if you could send up the same guy to a bat for every at bat. But you got to wait your turn in baseball. It's a different game.
A name that is out there right now that everyone seems to be on, and John, I'd like some insight here, because I think he's a hell of a ball player. I do think there's a great market for him, But I was surprised with how many teams are seem to be interesting in starting Marte. What insight can you give me on him and why so many teams see him as a fit?
Yeah, I think there are two things there. A huge finish. He was fantastic for Oakland, as he was for Miami. He had a great first half with Miami. I think even better in some regard for Oakland. I mean, for a while, he'd stolen all these bases and never been thrown out. And even the A's. The Moneyball A's, I think, appreciated, not that they're going to resign him. They're not. Obviously, they're trading off pieces. But it's his great platform year, and it's the fact that in this market, he happens to be a unique player. There aren't great center fielders, and there are a lot of outfielders, right? I mean, Castellanos, Conforto, Avisael Garcia, Peterson, Soler. There is a ton of good to very good outfielders out there to get. But in terms of Schwarber, in terms of center field, there's one that stands alone. I would say it's the same with catcher. Yan Gomes is really by far and away the best catcher who's on the free agent market. I think all the catchers are going to do okay because they're just the need outweighs the supply. But he's by far and away the best catcher. Is he a superstar? No. But Marte is both going for him. He is a big star, and he is a unique player on this market, being a very good center fielder. And, we see Texas is involved in Houston, Phillies, Mets, Yankees, Miami. But I heard their offer was a bit light for him. They seem to be concentrating on getting their own pitcher, Alcantara, done, and they probably will get that done. They have terrific pitching. They need hitting. Some way, somehow, but there was that one year where the previous regime dived in and spent money like crazy, and tried to spend even more money in Miami, and then they gave that huge deal to Stanton. But I think looking at the books now more reasonably, I don't see any regime going forward doing that in Miami. Mm-hmm.
On top of that, John, another name that's out there in the market right now, which is very unique, and I actually do have a question for you because I do not know this answer 100%. And I'm going to quote a tweet from you, and it's from MLB's John Heyman. MLB has notified our clubs that outfielder Saya Suzuki will be posted as of tomorrow morning, signing deadline 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday, December 22nd, with a potential work stoppage happening on December 1st. Yeah. What does that do to Suzuki?
Yeah, that you wonder. We're not sure. We're continuing now until the work stoppage. But that certainly throws a crimp in things. I will say this: if they're able to work it out, if the timing is okay, this is a terrific player, 4-time All-Star, 5-time Best 9 player, 3-time Gold Glove, right-handed hitting outfielder, and for a while there was this thought that the Japanese players coming over, the pitchers were better than the hitters. But I mean, look, Otani is an all-timer at this point. I mean, an MVP winner. You've got Ichiro Suzuki, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, 3,000 hits. And you've got Hideki Matsui. Exactly. So you got three that became huge, huge stars. So I don't think we can think that anymore. And this is a guy who was in the for the gold medal team, got 2 hits in the final game against the U.S. and a really terrific player, only 27 years old. I've heard all the West Coast teams are in. Of course, that means everybody but Oakland. They're not in anything, but Texas has been linked to him as well. So we hope they figure it out, but you're right. It does throw a crimp into things, and I wish I could give you a real answer on this, but there's just so many unknowns.
I know, it's crazy. And it's a funny thing because I get asked this question. I've been getting asking this question about a dozen times since you posted that tweet. And the truth is, I don't know the answer. I don't know. I can speculate and give you my thoughts. But at the end of the day, on December 1st, it's going to be a hell of a wrench in the system. Yeah. And I will tell you this, and I hate that I'm saying this twice in the show when I brought up Correa earlier, but I also have played against Suzuki in the World Baseball Classic, and he is one hell of a baseball player, would be an incredible addition to any team in the major leagues, especially on the West Coast. There are teams that immediately come to mind. The team that first jumps out to me would be Seattle. Maybe it might be the Ichiro Suzuki proximity, but it just seems like it would be a really good fit for a team that's right on the cusp.
Yeah, Seattle, San Francisco, I've heard as well. So they're definitely matches for Suzuki, terrific two-way player. And so he played against your team, Israel. He wasn't psyched out by the mention on the bench, I guess, huh?
Nope. We lost that game. He seemed perfectly fine with the mensch on the bench, and you know, at that point, the lights had gone down on us. At that point, we dropped the game before to the Netherlands. Unfortunately, we beat them the week before, but we lost the Netherlands, and we had to beat Japan in the Tokyo Dome. And if you've ever been to the Tokyo Dome, and you're going to play against the Japanese national team, you do not have home field advantage. I can't stress this enough.
No.
Yeah. They have it.
Well, I thought your team overperformed. You did a great job. The whole team did a great job. It was a great story. You had a lot of fun. And the mensch was your idea, so mazel tov for you for that. And really, it was a terrific story. And, you know, if you had beaten Team Japan, it probably would have been like a Buster Douglas Tyson result. You know,
I love the fact that you said we overperformed. We completely disagree. We thought we were going to honestly go to the finals. We were laughing when ESPN named us 200-1 to win the tournament. And we just started laughing like, does anyone here not realize? Yeah, we're a bunch of 4A guys, but we're incredibly good and we're about to beat up on all the stars. It was hilarious.
And then
we went up and we beat Korea. We beat Chinese Taipei. We beat Cuba. We beat the Netherlands. When we beat the Netherlands, that was when everybody started to really notice saying, uh-oh. And it was a lot of fun. It's a time in my life that I will never not look back on with anything but the greatest amount of fondness.
That's great.
But you know, getting back to this last thing, we're going to finish it up with this, and that is simply this. We talked about these teams, we talked about the market, and we did talk about the big name teams. But we're going to talk about really the top dogs, which in my mind the top dogs is a short list of teams. And it's really in my eyes 4 teams. And it's a little biased because it is on the East Coast and West Coast, but I'm going to talk about the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, and Giants. What are the priorities for each one of these 4 teams?
We'll start with the Yankees because I think I know them the best. The shortstop is the priority. Does that mean they're definitely going to sign Seager or Semien, who I think are the two shortstops they're most focused on? No, it doesn't. It means they definitely know they need to fill that position. I know they've liked Simmons in the past. You know, Joel Sherman mentioned the story, 1-year deal. They're going to have to do it some way, somehow. And this is a nice list to work with. There's certainly a second and third tier here. But, you know, if they don't spend there, they'll look at certainly starting pitcher is a second priority. They're going to have to sign somebody out of that list, which, you know what, they're fortunate to have shortstop and starting pitcher be their two top priorities. Shortstop's the best list, and starting pitcher is the deepest list. So they should be able to figure it out. They certainly have the wherewithal to do it. A left-handed hitting first baseman comes next. They want to bring Rizzo back. They liked him very much, but they also saw Brandon Belt took the qualifying offer, $18.4 million. Now Rizzo doesn't have the qualifying offer. That puts him in a little bit better bargaining position, but Brandon Belt's been fantastic the last couple of years. Rizzo, a little bit younger. He may have trouble getting that $70 million 4 years that he had going with the Cubs, but... you know, I know he's going to look for it. You never know. Atlanta's still trying to figure out first base. There are other teams looking at first base. Perhaps the Red Sox would get involved at first base. So, you know, I wouldn't want to rule anything out. But Rizzo makes sense. Olsen from the A's, they're talking about it. My understanding is they're shooting for the moon. Can't blame them. Terrific player. Hit nearly 40 home runs this year. You know, I think that's the guy the Yankees are looking at as well. And they, of course, they're on the list with starting Marte, who isn't. So that's my Yankee rundown. And the Dodgers, we know they got a lot of good free agents. They've got Seager, who they're trying to re-sign. They've got Scherzer. I think they want to re-sign him. And they've got Kershaw. Kershaw's going to end up with either the Dodgers or Texas, assuming he doesn't retire. And, you know, we know they've got Knebel and Jansen, particularly in the bullpen. And Jansen certainly loves being in LA, and I think they'll figure that out. I know Philly and some other teams are interested, but I've got to think they're going to figure that out. Red Sox, looking at middle infield, Baez is on the agenda. They're also looking at Schwarber. They'd love to bring him back. That could be interesting for them. And who was the fourth team that you mentioned?
The fourth team was the Dodgers, and the Giants.
Giants. Yeah, well, I mean, I think that Cobb, they're talking to Cobb seriously. So looks like they're going to get Wood and Cobb and DeSclafani, and they still have the offer on the table to Mats, who's got offers from the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Dodgers. the Mets. There's eight teams. You can look on my Twitter to get all eight teams. I don't have it in front of me, but so they're looking at beefing up the rotation and having a good deep rotation behind Logan Webb, who really stepped to the fore this year. And they're looking in the outfield. I mean, they've been linked to Castellanos. That's another team that's been linked to Marte. So they may have a big signing there. And they got Belt back on the very reasonable qualifying offer, $18.4 million. And, of course, we know they got Crawford done during the season. And as I said, Crawford was second in MVP for me. So, and fourth overall, so pretty good. Giants are off to a great start. They did a great year job last year, and they're off to a great start this year as well.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see where this offseason is going to go. Of course, we have some interesting stuff looming, so stay tuned. Stick around. Make sure you're following us both on social media. You can follow me at Decker6, but more importantly, especially with what's coming up, you better be following him at John Heyman. John, where else can people find you?
Well, I think that's the main place, but MLB Network, I mean, that's my big job. And, of course, Odyssey Radio, all the different stations from FAN, The Score. And so I'm on there a lot, as are you. And yes, Cody is very good at social media, as you could tell. Very funny guy. And
very John, funny. Stop it. Noah's better. Noah's better.
Well, among active players, Noah's the best. But among the retired players, I think your media career is going to outstrip your major league career.
God, I hope so. That is a low bar, John. Low bar. Appreciate it, man. And I thank you so much for joining me today, of course, here on Big Time Baseball. Make sure you follow the show. Like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts. That's Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you'd like it. Of course, follow us on social media. And guys, enjoy your Thanksgiving and enjoy some baseball in any way you can. John, thank you so much, man. You're the best.
Oh, you are. Great talking to you, Cody.
You too, everybody. Be safe out there. Enjoy the holidays. Beat it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.